I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
J. Cross, how good would you say you are at the guitar?
I would say
Your three choices are beginner,
yes,
intermediate,
yes,
or advanced.
Probably beginner.
Okay, excellent. How would you like to move up to intermediate?
I'd really like to be an intermediate guitar player. That's the only thing I've ever wanted to be.
Good. That's about as far as you'll get.
Yes.
Unless
You
use Guitar Tricks.
Okay, tell me more.
Guitar Tricks is an excellent website to teach you how to move from beginner to intermediate to advanced guitar.
Okay.
Whether you're just starting out or whether, you know, you should be better than you are.
Like me.
Indeed.
Yes.
Guitar Tricks will help you move through those stages as a guitar player. And good for you, J. Cross. We have worked together with Guitar Tricks to bring a 14-day free trial to not only you, but to the listeners of the Guitar Nerds podcast.
So that means I can try it for 14 days, and if I'm not into it, just cancel it.
You can, indeed.
But I'm probably going to be into it.
I think you probably will.
Okay.
You'll notice a swift advancement of your guitar skills.
Excellent.
So do you want to know where you can get this offer?
Where can you get the offer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Can you repeat that for me?
I can. GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks.
Is there like an app that you can use, or do you have to do it on your computer?
GuitarNerds.net/guitar tricks. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Hello.
And Jay Cross.
Hi, Mark.
No Branton again this evening.
Who?
Sorry, Branton fans.
I feel like this is, we're going through a transitional period where we are getting, like, we're just having Brantonless podcasts to weed out, like, the actual guitar nerds from the clutter of people, of reprobates who think that he's the best one.
It's the Branton fandom.
Yeah,
I'm going to bring him back. Beau. Bring in Beau. That's what I say.
Bring back Beau.
What if he comes back, like, repackaged? You know, like, I mean, I know I always talk about wrestling on this podcast, but when a gimmick's not working, they send them away for a few months and they come back as a totally different thing.
Like Mankind and Cactus Jack.
Yeah, or like Papa Shango coming back as the Godfather.
Puke coming back as Droz.
Yeah, I don't think he was ever Puke.
Wasn't he?
No,
I think he was Puke.
He was only Puke in the Beyond the Mat documentary.
Oh, and maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
They debuted him as a member of Legion of Doom, I believe, at one point. He was, Droz. Anyway, 90s wrestling.
How about it?
What if Branton comes back as a totally different character? I mean, he could do the voice already.
I can absolutely imagine him rebranding himself.
Yeah.
He's like, because he's gone on a European tour. So he's going to find a new thing that he's into. You know how every now and again he latches onto something new.
Oh, I want a travel guitar or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Or, oh, I'm vegan now. He's going to come. He's going to have found a new thing. Like, I've spent time in Berlin and now I like techno. What if that's what it'll be.
What if he just comes back and he just speaks German?
I mean, fantastic. We can, maybe what we should do is, if there are any German listeners out there who would be interested in purchasing the Guitar Nerds franchise.
Yeah. You can keep Branton.
You can keep him. And you'd be doing everyone a favour.
That sounds.
He'll come back with some a fancy umlaut over the O.
Brontun.
Boob.
Sure,
boob. Brontun.
Boob. Brontun.
So yeah, sorry Bo fans, you're going to be Bo-less this week.
I mean, we only found out what, yesterday or the day before. He was like,
no,
oh,
I
yeah.
think he did tell us like a week ago, we just ignored him.
Yeah, right, yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, I think he only confirmed this morning that he wasn't going to be here.
He's so. Honestly, for a geezer who's got his metaphorical fingers in so many literal pies, I don't understand how he gets by day to day.
No,
he's so busy all the time, but has no idea of where he's supposed to be the next day.
Just sort of bimbling through life.
I know. What a rubbish geezer.
But just a little bit of housekeeping, as it were. Branton's probably back next week. We all hope he is, because I might not be, because I'm moving house, which, if you saw the Seymour Duncan competition, which is up on the Facebook group at the moment, you would have seen the chaos that is here. So I move next Monday, which is when we normally record, and I probably won't have any internet by then, so you guys might have to just sail the ship on your own.
Excellent.
Or we may miss a week, which would be rubbish, because we've never missed a week, except at Christmas, when we all have our little Christmas holiday.
But never missed a week?
No, we'll work something out.
Wow.
You might just be...
We even did a solo podcast.
I did a solo podcast. It might just be you in your room ranting on your own.
Riding solo.
Maybe because he's missed 2 weeks, we should give Joe a solo podcast.
I don't think...
That's
any,
a very, very bad idea. Yeah. Anyway, how have you all been? Matt, you've been doing loads of stuff on the Facebook group this week, I noticed.
I'm busy. I went to the Royal Albert Hall, met Joe Bonamassa.
Oh, yeah.
We're best mates now.
Tell us about that.
For work, I actually went to go and meet Michael Rhodes, who is a famous Nashville session bass player. We got in contact and he wanted to see some stuff, so we went down to see him. And he put us in contact with Mikey, who remembered me from way back in the GAK days when I did the rig rundown with them.
Legally,
which was quite nice.
Legally not a rig rundown.
Okay, with a gear showdown? No, that's the wrong thing.
The
talk, gear talk.
We can't use gear talk either. Tonium harmonium.
Yes.
Pandemonium.
Pandemonium.
So Mikey is his tech.
Guitar tech. His long-term guitar tech. Yes. He remembered me from back in the GAK days, and he was really cool. He came and looked at some stuff, and then Michael Rhodes managed to get Joe down with a 59 to come and try some stuff, and he was into a couple of bits, so that was super nice to kind of get some feedback from him. And we got to watch him sound check for a bit, which was amazing. Got to check out his rig is the polar opposite. For like Joe Bonamassa fans who have been with him a while will probably know this, but from what you saw in that video that we did a few years ago when we were all at GAK to now, it's like you couldn't imagine a totally different rig. He was using five different like flavors of like Marshall amp, and now he's using four vintage Fender Tweed amps
and PRS guitars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And a Line 6 Spider head. The tone from that was just amazing.
Wicked.
Straight into the PA. It was a Helix LT straight into a PA.
Yeah, nice, nice.
Two guitar pedals.
Which were,
one of them. The thing is, Mikey was talking about doing rig rundowns, tonium harmoniums with other magazines. And he's like, there's not much to see. So I don't know if I can actually talk about what I saw or not.
Okay, well, maybe we shouldn't talk about it then.
So I think just in case, we won't talk about it.
Just because we get criticised for not talking about guitars too much, can you tell us what guitar he was playing?
Yes, in the sound check he was playing, and this was quite funny because I was watching it from the side and I was like, why is he playing a brand new Gibson Les Paul Traditional in gold top? I was like, that guitar is so shiny and so new. And I was like, I know he's had a signature gold top. I know he's had a custom shop, but it would have been Voss finish. It was like quite glossy. I couldn't work it out. And then when I talked to Mikey afterwards, I went, what gold top was he playing? He went, a friend of his has lent him his mint condition 1957 gold top. He's like, it's basically brand new.
God. How does that even happen? Like, surely, if you leave it in the case, like, it's going to, the finish is going to not, you know, it's gonna, know. The shine's going to come off it.
I'm assuming it's just someone who's, like, played it very lightly and cleaned it for 50 years.
Yeah.
But then, you'd expect it to get that sort of swirly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Isn't it?
But it was basically like, I think it had a few cracks and stuff on it, but it was basically mint condition.
Wow.
And it was funny because when he came down to the dressing room and he bought his 59, his really famous like Skinner Burst 59. And I was like, and he's like, oh, the last thing I really need is more guitars and amps because, you know, I've already got loads. He's like, we just did a stock take of my house and I've got 763 guitars and amps. Including 100 vintage Fender Tweed amps. And the big thing for him that it was on the Reverb video I did recently is he's got the Mint Tweed set, or what he calls the Mint Tweed set. Yeah. So it's every Tweed amp they ever made in the 50s, including some I've never heard of, like the Harvard and like the high-powered Twin. So I think they made like a couple of ones that are like much rarer.
Yeah, I've never even heard of the Harvard.
Yeah, I think it's like in between a Deluxe and a... Champ, I think.
Okay.
That, but yeah. So he was saying he's got a lot of stuff. Basically, I was like, "Wow, fair play." But it was funny when I was outside. I heard two people talking to his tech, who are obviously collectors who have lent Joe stuff in the past, and they were talking about which 59s they'd just bought. And I went, "What a crazy club to be in!"
Yeah.
Just... No, I just bought this 50. I heard one guy say he just bought the last ever Burst Finish 58 in production before they started in 59.
Wow. I mean, it's just another world, isn't it? It's a completely different world from, you know, the things that we normally talk on this podcast. I would say that we're fairly, like, retail-focused. You know, we talk about, you know, what Fender have got out, what Gibson have got out, you know, what Boss, TC Electronic, that sort of thing. And then there is a whole... Well, I mean, I think there's a few different worlds in the guitar world. You know, there's the more metal guys, which we do talk about, you know, Ibanez and ESP and the bigger names, but people who are into the more sort of custom fan-fretted things.
Yeah.
But then there's... And, you know, those guys, a lot of the time, are using, like, digital modelling bits and pieces, which we delve into every now and then. But then there's this whole other, like, upper world where they're talking about, you know, proper vintage stuff that I just think your average guitar player will never, ever see.
Well, I mean, it's kind of bridging the gap between sort of guitar collecting and guitar enthusiasm and, like, art.
Yeah, 100%.
Like, you know, being an art collector.
Yeah.
You know, and it's if you've got that sort of disposable income, it seems like as good a place as any to
completely
invest it, because
I mean, it sounded like these guys were actually like in the business as well. But I mean, I just think you've got to know so much about that level of guitars and specifically that era.
Yeah,
because I'm sure there's got to be a lot of fakes. There's got to be, like, if you've just someone with loads of money, I don't think you probably could just pick up the phone and go, I want to buy a 59 from a shop, but you wouldn't actually know what you're buying.
No, but I think once you've seen enough of those guitars, you can tell. Yeah. Like, I remember holding that, I've talked about it a few times on here, that 54 Junior, and that just felt proper. You know, and other old Gibsons and stuff, they have a definite feel that would be very, very difficult to fake, I think.
I mean, the 59 that I played when I went to Nashville, I mean, it just felt like... I mean, I know custom shops are fantastic and the relicking's amazing and those guitars feel great, but I don't think you can replicate, like, 50 years of playing it in.
Well, if you think that basically, you know, you've seen a few of those guitars and you can tell the difference between...
Yeah.
The custom shop, which should in theory be the best kind of fake, you know, old guitar and a real, you know, an old one, and then it should be easy enough for collectors to tell, I guess.
It was, he said something really interesting though, because I was like, Joe in this like video talks about Guitar Safari, which is basically what he goes on when he goes to buy vintage guitars. And I said to Mikey, I was like, oh, have you been to any shops while you're here? Obviously you're in London, Denmark Street. And he said no, we haven't bought a vintage guitar in the UK for about 3 or 4 years. He said the market's really tainted with everything that kind of went on at Music Ground and stuff that, and kind of the history. He said just stores aren't that great. He said the prices aren't great. Obviously I know the dollar isn't, I think, is pretty good for them right now, so you would, I think you'd, it would make sense, but he's just like, it's just not a great place to buy vintage guitars, which I was quite surprised to hear. And actually hearing it from him was, you know, a more trustworthy source, I suppose, because they've gone out and bought hundreds of vintage guitars.
And don't forget as well that market is just by way of the numbers, you know, it's a smaller market because, you know, people weren't exporting vintage guitars a lot of the time back in the day.
Yeah, for sure.
So actually the stuff that made it here is, you know, very, very limited compared to what's available in the States.
I guess there's also the issue that, you know, we're seeing with a lot of modern guitar companies, you know, current guitars, with the CITES issue with transporting rosewood. You know, if you, so I've actually been doing a little bit of research on it this week, because I hadn't realized that because we've spoken about it before, saying like, oh well, if you take a guitar, you know, across the border and you don't have the correct blah 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 blah, you've actually got a 10 kilogram personal allowance.
Okay.
For rosewood that you can transport without a CITES
agreement. You could just take a guitar with you.
You could take a guitar on a plane, you know, or on a wherever across the border, as long as it's not obviously Brazilian rosewood, because Brazilian rosewood is just illegal now.
Okay. Wow.
You can't make any money with a Brazilian rosewood guitar because you are breaking the law.
What if,
even if that is going down the dog and duck and getting paid 50 quid.
What if you prove that you're not making any money with it?
I don't know about that.
Okay.
I assume it's okay. I honestly have no idea. From what I understand, Brazilian rosewood is illegal.
God, it's so weird, isn't it, that, you know, even 5 years ago, Fender Custom Shop were making stuff with Brazilian rosewood.
Yeah.
And now you can't legitimately sell, if you'd bought that legitimately from a shop 5 years ago, you can't now sell that guitar.
No, well, Fender had to buy stock back from people.
From shops?
No, from punters.
Yeah.
As
really?
Well.
End users, yeah. Yeah,
really?
I remember we had a guy who bought, do you remember we had those, were they solid Brazilian rosewood neck, or were they just Brazilian
no,
rosewood
No, they weren't fret? Solid neck, I think it was just a board.
Yeah, it was just a board, but they had bare knuckles in, didn't they? And
yeah, I remember those
guys
guitars.
Were like worrying about the kind of, this was like when I was still at Jack, so I mean this was a couple of years ago now, and yeah, one guy said that Fender actually bought his guitar back.
Yeah,
I mean,
wow. Yeah, apparently it happened a few times, but and then that happened again.
There must be plenty out there though who
presumably
Fender didn't have the details, or the
and
store
also,
didn't have the details.
People who don't realise that it's Brazilian rosewood.
Yeah,
people who don't realise they're doing anything wrong, and that's the problem. Is that if someone does have a Brazilian rosewood board guitar, and they take, you know, because that as a sort of spectacle, you know, in whilst it's illegal, in the same way as, like, you know, having an ivory, I don't know, something made out of ivory,
really cool and just awesome, right?
Yeah, well, but what I mean is, you know, if you take a guitar with a Brazilian rosewood board across the borders, and it's like in the United States, it's like run by the Department of like National Fisheries, like the I can't remember the name of the actual department, but
it's not like the EPA or something.
No, it's not EPA. It's to do with like transporting and maybe it's the EPA. Anyway, it doesn't matter. If you have got a guitar like that and you don't realise that that's what it is, and they go, "Oh, that's Brazilian rosewood. That's illegal," they can take it off you and they can burn it.
Wow. That seems a little bit wasteful.
Well, I mean, completely.
If we're talking about the concept, if the whole aim of the game is to protect rosewood, it then seems a bit stupid to go, right, stick it on the fire.
Smells great, apparently.
Yeah, that's why. That's why. They just want to keep the last smells to themselves. They love it.
So, I also found out this week that the reason that this whole Brazilian rosewood thing kicked off is... And I'm sort of hearing this secondhand, so I would like to preface this. I don't mean to. I'm not trying to get anybody into trouble. This is relative conjecture.
As always, we're not lawyers, and you should always take this advice with a pinch of salt.
Apparently, Mark Knopfler's fault.
Really?
Because he sort of found out that he had a Brazilian rosewood board and got in touch with someone to be like, if I take this across the border to a gig in Germany, am I going to get it back? And they looked into it and went, no, you're not.
Right.
And they started cracking down on it.
Right.
And but it all came from that one moment of Mark Knopfler.
It's always Mark Knopfler's fault.
So there we go. And as I say, this is somewhat conjecture. I heard it from a geezer down the dog
down,
and duck.
Down the dog and duck.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Mark Knopfler.
It was Mark Knopfler down the dog and duck. Yeah,
yeah. So, interesting times. Matt, it's good to get a little insight into to Joe Bonamassa's current setup.
Because I was just thinking, when you talk about relicking and aging, because I always see on the Tube these adverts for Jack Daniels. They have these amazing adverts about Jack Daniels being 150 years old. And obviously, they like sometimes these like companies age whiskey in a barrel for like 50 years. There's no guitar company thought, why don't we make some guitars now, then just hang them on the wall. Everyone can play them for like 30 years, and then we'll sell them.
Well, I don't think whiskey is aged for 50 years. I don't think it's...
They do some, like... They can get, like, 36-year-old, like,
really?
Single malt whiskeys.
I don't really know anything about whiskey.
I mean, they're, like, hundreds of pounds.
Well, for sure,
for
a single shot.
But, I mean it can be done. And, obviously, people buy bottles of wine that are, like, 70 years old.
I'm sure there's a few Deans and BC Riches hanging in the back of guitar shop somewhere that have been there for nearly 50 years.
I guess that's the thing, though, isn't it? Like, you've got to have the... you've got to have the foresight to think, right, I'm starting this company and in 30 years people are still going. And also, like, where are you going to store something for 30 years?
And also, will anyone care?
Well, that's absolutely,
like,
absolutely.
If Gibson came out and said, oh, by the way, actually, we've had these since like 1987.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, firstly, they'd probably be quite crap guitars.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But also, secondly...
Is that a Kayla Trem?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we built these. We knew they would age well. Oh, dear. Matty, one other thing to talk about from things that you've been doing on the internet. You've been lusting after the Digitech XP1000.
Yeah, I can't remember if we... I'm sure we've... Well, I mean, we've talked about it loads, and we've always talked about the space station.
Yes.
And it was one of those things where... From when I was talking to Nick Reinhardt the other week over email, and he was saying that he loves his XP300s, and he's got an original one, and then he's got a couple of others. And the guy I used to live with put one on eBay recently. I was like, I'm sure that's my mate, because of the like the problems where it came from. And I was like, man, I really want one, but an XP300 on eBay are going for like 400 quid, 500 quid if you want an original one. But Jetpack mods, who have been modding them for about 10 years, are offering an XP300 modded for like half that price. And effectively, all it is the EEPROM chip, or the brain of the computer chip inside, is just swapped out for a different one.
So do they actually switch the chip, or is it just something that they get in there and reprogram it basically to...
No, I think they actually switch the chip.
Right, okay.
So what, is it switched for something more modern, more up to date?
No, I think they're switching it for... I don't know, because they can't be switching it for other XP300 chips unless they've got some. Unless there's some sort of code that you need, and then you can buy a more modern EEPROM chip and then, reprogram it. But they've got an XP100 which they've modded to a 300 and upgraded a couple of the parts, because those like late 90s whammies weren't particularly well made. Or they've got the 1000 which is all four, so the whammy, the modulation, the space station, and the reverb. But some of the I kind of want a space station, part because I used to have one. I used to have a 1000. But also because the space station's got so many great sounds in that you can't get from any pedal today.
What I don't understand is why
there's a lot of people.
Why has no one just made one? Like, there's so many clone pedal companies out there, and people are selling original XP300s for 400 quid. Why doesn't someone just make one? Like,
because there's a company that have remade the Akai Deep Impact pedal recently. And it's about 400 quid. So it's almost as much as buying a second-hand one, almost. I mean, the second-hand ones of the Akai bass synths are like 600 quid now. But they've made like what they call an exact replica, pretty much, but with a couple more modern features like MIDI and stuff. But yeah, I'm surprised no one's gone, oh, I might as well sit here, because I'm sure it is just DSP. It's just programming.
But
and
also,
most companies use the same language, so you could reverse engineer it. Maybe it's too much work.
Well, that it probably is too much work, especially because if we're talking about clones, like, you know, there's a reason why most of these pedal companies are just constantly putting out different iterations of fuzz pedals. You know, boutique fuzz pedals are the most popular pedals for a reason, because they're easy to make. And it's like, well, do I spend all this time reverse engineering a pedal that I know was popular? Or if I'm going to spend that time, do I just produce something new? Which I assume is what most of these people want to do, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it's weird because although I'm not like involved in it, I follow like some of the retro gaming community, and there's loads of people out there who make like their own like NES games, and like the amount of dedication and work that goes into that to basically sell none, I'm like, I'm surprised there's not more people actually sitting there and like programming a bit of code and stuff. But I suppose there is no money in it for a boutique guy to do it. It would, like you say, it'd probably be so expensive.
Well, yeah, I just wonder, like, the cost of manufacturing the casing is probably at that point the most expensive thing. So, yeah but I mean, even if they were £250, you know, it's surely, you know, compared.
I think there are some modern builders doing some pretty amazing, like, pedals that do some pretty crazy things out there, I suppose. And that people are certainly going that way. But you're right, if it was £250, I'm sure people would snap it up.
You'd have two of them.
I would.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
I could just buy the Digitech, although I haven't seen one on eBay for ages. The EX7 Expression Factory. Do you remember that?
Don't do that. That's not the same thing.
No, it's not. But it had like seven different distortions in it.
Yeah.
Model disc, because they had the Distortion Factory.
That was terrible. Distortion Factory was terrible. On a similar note, when I move, I think one of my first purchases is going to be FM4. I was watching some demos of the Line 6 FM4 the other day.
What is wrong with you?
They're so good.
They're not good.
They are. They're really good.
You are such a mug.
They're a classic, and I really want one again in my life. I think the like dual synth stuff on there sounds great.
Although, actually, you should check out... I posted it in the group the other day. There's a company called Meris who have made this thing called the Autobit Junior, which is like, it's like a... They call it a bit crusher, but it does way more than the bit crusher. And the guy who... co-designed it is the guy who was the lead engineer on the FM4.
That sounds interesting. Have you posted that in the group already?
I have posted it in the group, and then after I posted it in the group, I was like, I think I really want to buy one of these. They've started stocking them at GAK. I was like, Joe, why didn't you tell me? And he went, sort of like, just didn't think about it. I was like, he's, thanks.
As we mentioned earlier, he's useless and doesn't know what's happening from day to day. Yeah. That's why. So,
but they're like 200 and... I think they're like £280, which is probably, I suppose like a secondhand FM4 is about £100
or something. No, about £100.
Yeah.
About £100.
Yeah, that's
or
what...
you could buy the rack unit, which are definitely going to go up in value. Someone put all three on recently on eBay for £800.
Whoa, easy now. You're sitting on a gold mine, Matty. That's what
I know.
Should we move on to some news?
Oh, is that me?
Yeah, you need to do the news. He's not here, is he?
He's not here. I've been thinking about this. I don't think I put enough...
You need to go lower.
I don't think I put enough welly into it.
Hang on, let me get
either.
To the fader and ride the fader. Okay.
News.
That's good. And I think probably the first time that it's actually been news rather than nude men or whatever
it
would normally say.
Well, so. I thought I'd capture the spirit, but... be sensible.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I like it.
It's a sensible podcast for sensible individuals.
It is. We'll have no talk of those weird travel guitars around here. anyway, first up, big bit of news. TC Electronic have announced the Polytune 3, the brand new iteration of the Polytune and Polytune 2. Probably the second most popular guitar tuner out there, I would imagine.
That Korg Pitch Black is still killing it.
Yeah, yeah. The Korg CA30, absolutely destroying that market.
Korg DT1000,
the snark clip-on tuner. Jay Cross, have you got some details?
Yeah, so this has sort of come a little out of nowhere. Well, I say it's come a little out of nowhere. We've been seeing all these rumblings from TC Electronic over the past 6 months or so. We know that they were purchased by
Music Group. Behringer, basically.
Essentially, Behringer. And at the turn of the year, we saw all of those new... all of those new TC pedals came out.
Yep.
In like a brand new chassis and everything. And then, of course, over the last couple of weeks, there's been maybe some leaks of potential new...
other things.
TC Electronic products, possibly, that we couldn't possibly comment on.
Other podcasts have.
Have they?
Yeah, we should...
We are far more sensible.
Yeah, I think until it's official, it's only fair that we don't speculate.
However, This is. I don't think anybody was really expecting an update to the Polytune, because as far as I'm aware, the Polytune does allow for firmware updates. Is that the Polytune 2? Is that not correct? Oh,
no.
Okay. Well,
and actually, the funny thing is, with this tuner, all they've done is basically make a TU3.
Well, yes, of course, and that's
because they haven't actually upgraded the tuning feature.
Right. Okay. So that's what's quite funny about this, and we did. This was pointed out so that to finish my tangential...
No, not tangential. Yes, it's background.
Basically, the Polytune 3 has got the TC bona fide buffer. What's funny? What's funny?
His name was Boner.
So it's got the bona fide buffer in the inside the chassis.
The old
and
buffer.
I do remember there being a lot of lulls that were shed when TC Electronic released the bona fide buffer, not for that reason, but because they've always made a big deal of the fact that their pedals are true bypass.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very funny that they've released all these pedals that are true bypass because they don't want to colour your signal, but, oh, they do sound not great when there's not a buffer. So they've released the buffer. So, you know, there's now a buffer in your tuner. So... it's not completely a surprise, but something that I was thinking about this week was, what about people, and maybe this is an old school way of doing it, but what about people who use like a tuner in on, say, like an expression pedal? You know, because the buffer's not going to help those people because it's not within the circuit.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, you're right.
Is that something that happens that regularly? Maybe it doesn't anymore?
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you use something like an ES8, for example...
But the ES8's got a buffer inside it, so it don't matter.
Yeah, but it's got a tuner out, so if you weren't using any buffers... But yeah, you're right. If some people are running, like, I don't know, a Ernie Ball Volume Pedal Junior or a Boss FV30, it's got a tuner out, then yeah... Basically, it doesn't matter as long as the tuner is accurate. It doesn't matter what's inside it because you're not actually running anything.
You're not using
it.
The buffer.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But you know, this is cool. I'm glad that because I think we were a little bit worried when TC went to Music Group.
And released that whole range of cheaper pedals, none of us have heard yet. I think Matt, have you heard them?
I've heard a couple being demoed, but yeah. I've not actually tried one, and they sound okay. They're actually quite massive.
Yeah.
They're like bigger than normal compact, like a Boss compact pedal. They're bigger than that, I thought was
That's
a bit weird. I think the only thing with this, I mean, I'm always going to stand firmly behind the Boss tuner, obviously, but they are expensive now. They're nearly 90 quid.
I mean, they've always...
For a polytune.
No, they were, so, they were like...
No, they weren't. They were 69 quid at one point. They were the cheapest option.
Yeah.
And they're nearly... Yeah, they're nearly 90 quid.
What's the TU3? 79, something like that?
79, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, having you on the podcast aside, Matty, I think all of us kind
we're
of
all,
stand
we're
firmly
all boss
behind the
when
the
it comes
TU3.
To the TU3. Yeah. Yeah,
when it
yeah,
comes to tuners, I, mean, I think, you know.
It's funny because I use, only because it fits on my pedal board at the moment, a Polytune Mini, but I'm going to upgrade to the TU3W, the Waz one, purely because the screen is so much better.
Yeah.
Because it's got blue lights in it, yeah.
But it's like they're like super bright, and they're just it's so accurate.
Because that was like, one of the things like, that was one of the things with the Polytune was that it was always brighter than anything else.
Yeah,
I
the
seem to remember.
The standard TU3 is a little dull because it's got that kind of orange LED yeah. to it.
Bigger LEDs rather than like those tiny, super powerful ones. I
yeah,
suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So personally. I think this announcement, as potentially uninspiring as it is on face value, I think it's a good thing for TC Electronic because they were always, you know, ever since we've been doing this podcast, they've always been a firm favourite. You know, they've always done cool stuff, cool, like, sort of innovative and, you know, they've sort of given Boss something... They've not allowed Boss to rest on their laurels. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they've really given them a run for the money, and they've done some great pedals. And I think that this is a good omen. I really hope that we see some. You know, maybe I don't know, just picking something out of thin air. Maybe like a new Hall of Fame. That'd be cool. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if they did a new Hall of Fame, that would be really cool.
Hopefully, we see something like a new Hall of Fame.
I mean, what if it had like, you know, what I've always found with the Hall of Fame is there's not enough kind of expressive control to it. So if they could maybe add a feature in some way that would like add some more expressiveness to
also
it.
Missing the tend to miss that shimmer control as
yeah,
well,
yeah,
like
yeah.
the shimmer option
yeah
so,
yeah yeah
I don't know maybe something like that would be
if
cool.
They could do something like that. I think that would be a very good pedal.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, you know, I just think that it's TC moving in a really cool direction. I'm really excited to see what comes next.
Now, Branton's not been on the podcast for 2 weeks, and what that means is we've not talked about a guitar brand that none of us have heard of in funky colours with flame maple tops, with sort of, you know, high output pickups and stuff like that. So I thought it was time to talk about Iconic Guitars, who have just released the Evolution Series T and T Limited. Matt Knight, give us the deets.
I'm sure we've talked about these before.
I don't remember them at all.
I'm sure Branton's mentioned them
probably.
At some point.
Who?
Bo Branton.
Oh, gotcha.
I thought you said Joe. I don't know who that is.
No. Yeah, Iconic Guitars. I was just doing a bit of research into them. Basically, Fender clones, I suppose, which they've done in a vintage T and a vintage S style, and they've kept those sort of like more true to the original.
I like. Just to pull you up on something there. I like how you called them. You didn't hold back in saying they were Fender clones, but then you did respect their T style and their S style.
Well, that's what they're called on their website, Vintage S and Vintage T. So they've kind of done their sort of modern twist on it. So the Evolution T and the Evolution S. And on the press release, on the telly one, or the Vintage T, I actually think it looks really good. I mean, it is a little bit PRS-y, but... I kind of like it. Two humbuckers, like rather than two single coils, flame maple top, like a 5A flame maple top, so really, really nice.
That's too many A's. I'll only go to 4A.
Lola pickups, yeah. Five-way switch, so basically more of a kind of Sur route, I suppose. But nice if you want that kind of look and or that kind of body shape of a telly, but you want something way more modern.
Can I just say the picture on the that came with the press release is a sort of sea blue fade, so from like dark royal blue through to like a denim color.
Yeah,
and they've gone with gold hardware. I mean,
no,
come
I
on.
Think it's chrome hardware.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
it
it's
looks
chrome
gold
hardware.
To me.
It looks gold, and if it is gold, that's unexcusable.
It's just a bit
I mean, that is unexcusable, but I think it's chrome. I'm sure it's chrome. I just think that the brass saddles might throw you off slightly.
Yeah, perhaps, perhaps. But
you would expect them to say that it had gold hardware in the spec.
Yeah, perhaps. They look incredible.
The funny thing is, I think the teddies look nice, but I must admit I'm not a fan of the strats. Because I think once you put a flame maple or a quilt maple on, like, a normal strat-style body...
Takes it into Sir territory, doesn't it?
I just don't know if it works. But I think the teddy actually looks quite nice. But they're limited dealers in the US. I'm sure they're, like, really, really nice guitars to play because, you know, I've got a feeling that at that sort of money, they're about $2,000 starting price. I'm pretty sure they're going to be fairly well built.
I expect
to get our hands on one, but I think there's only California, Massachusetts, Tennessee at the moment.
Apart from that one in the picture, which looking at their website now, and they're actually quite tasteful. They even do like a kind of Charvel-esque.
Well, they called it
strat.
The SoCal, which is the name of the...
It is, yeah. Which is cool. I mean, that sort of thing. Two humbuckers with a Floyd, fine. There's a place for it. This Strat looks... I mean, a lot of what they've done, they've gone for the Artist series, and they've just made a Gilmore Strat, which is...
Yeah, I think which is great. I think that is great. I like the fact they call it the Dark Side.
Okay.
And they actually even write on it in the style of the Gilmore Black Strat. It's not in the style of. It is a Gilmore
Black
Strat.
That's amazing. Yeah. So the Artist series guitars for the iconic Artist series guitars, you've got the Dark Side.
Yeah.
You've got the Sultan.
Okay, nice. Guess who that is.
You've got the Crazy Diamond.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Texas Flood. Like,
I mean, it's pretty obvious
holding any bars, are they?
No. So cool. Yeah, I think you know, we, like I said, we get criticised not talking about guitars enough, and generally it's because there's not much guitar news. So I thought I'd kind of pick up on something that's normally is a bit out of our wheelhouse, and I think they're not bad looking guitars.
Yeah, I think the thing is that I suppose we talk about pedals and amps more because companies tend to release that as like constant fodder, and there's way more of those companies releasing that stuff, where Fender can't really go, oh, we've got a new guitar every week, because the sheer amount of like work that goes into producing a new product and then the marketing behind it, you can't just do it every week, where a pedal company can go, we've got a new pedal out, here's a cool demo video we shot of it, who wants one?
And also there's, you know, in terms of the more independent stuff, you know, there's far more independent pedal builders than there are
smaller barriers to entry.
Exactly. Yeah, you can put a pedal together for 40 quid, you know, 30, 40 quid, whereas putting a guitar together is going to be, you know, if you're building something like those ones that we're looking at, you're talking about multiple hundreds, if not into the thousands of pounds, which is not something you can just do in your shed, you know. Talking of pedal builders, there is one last bit of news this week. Our friends at Frederick Effects have announced a brand new pedal, the Standard Fuzz Machine. Matt Knight, have you got some deets?
Yes. So Frederick Effects, a company that managed to make awesome pedals for basically no money in London, have made the Standard Fuzz Machine, which is a clone of one of my favourite fuzz pedals. And I used to own one, and I totally regret selling it. I think I sold it to Krista Franks, who was an old GAK employee, actually, and I think he's probably still got it. It's based off the Ibanez Standard Fuzz.
The one with the faders?
Yes, or known also as the Shinai Fuzz or the Univox Super Fuzz, back when basically all companies made the same pedal, just under with a different name. So that pedal was a massive kind of... with two huge faders on it that were basically depth and balance. And I could never really work it out because they're both like volume controls, basically. It was kind of a bit weird, but the best way to do it was basically just turn them both up to full.
Yeah.
Well, that's very similar to the harmonic percolator, is that like they're both kind of volume controls, kind of, you know. And, you know, we found that with the utility percolator as well. It was just a bit mad.
Yeah.
So this is effectively a clone of that, with obviously his twist on it. He's added an extra tone switch. One keeps it standard, one adds a little bit more cut and a little bit more fizz if you want something a bit crazy. But these are great, like the harmonic percolator, these are just great for kind of loud amps on the edge, and if you just want something to tip it over but you don't want to add something that's going to give you, you know, Marshall in a box, say, or something like that. You want something that's just like gnarly 60s fuzz tone. And I had one of those Ibanez fuzzes and it was great. It was really usable. It's not necessarily responsive to your volume. It's just great to just turn on when something's really loud and rock out. And they're 100 quid. I still don't know how he makes... I'm sure he could probably charge like 200 quid. And it just...
Don't give me any ideas, man.
It's a boutique pedal. Yeah, but I don't think he's that kind of guy.
Yeah, you think he's just more the kind of guy that listens to a boring guitar podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He probably listened to it once and then was like, maybe not. But I mean, everything he makes is pretty much under 100 quid. And I just find that so, so impressive.
Well, considering that, you know, they're handmade in the UK, and they're going, the build is always very chunky on them because they don't go for like the die cast box. It's always that kind of bent aluminium, isn't it? Like, yeah, very, very different way of making pedals. I wonder if that's how he's keeping the cost down, maybe, but actually what you get at the end of it feels more substantial than something that's just in a regular die cast box. They're super cool. Super cool. We've had loads and loads of questions this week, so I thought we could devote some time at the end of the podcast to rattle through some of those. So maybe now is time for...
Question.
Yeah, that was pathetic.
I know, sorry. I mean, my voice is naturally like two more octaves
shrill,
higher
bit
than
more
James.
Annoying. Yeah, your voice is naturally pathetic.
Excuse me. Questions.
It sort of seems like there's just not enough air coming out.
I'm just not as Joe's full of hot air.
He is there. Okay, fine. I'll take that.
Okay, let me try once more. Question. No, I'm not gonna.
You're taller. You're supposed to be more deep.
I've got a high voice. I don't know what to tell you.
You have a very high voice. So we've got a whole load of questions in the old question bucket. And I'm going to pick them out. There's some of these I want to do more than others, and not necessarily in the order on this sheet. So I'll keep you guys on your toes. First one comes from Will, who says, "Hi guys, thinking of picking up one of the PRS SE Custom 24 Exotic finishes. Just seen that PRS are doing limited edition satin nitro Vela guitars for an extra £250. They sound like cool guitars and have a cool torque guard, but I probably won't get a chance to try one before buying. What should I do?" So SE Exotic or Vela with the satin nitro finish. Matt Knight, what do you reckon?
I did actually comment on this in the Facebook group, and as much as I love the Exotics, I think they're awesome guitars, they look cool. I've played those Velas a lot and they are great guitars for the money. And yeah, I think if they're on a deal, I think if you want to go for something that's a little bit more unique in its sound as well, because it's kind of got their own sort of Dynasonic pickup in the neck, and to me it sounded like the cross between like a Les Paul and a Tele. It sort of had like the Tele twang, but it had a little bit more bottom end and a little bit more of a kind of depth to it. And I just think they're just such great guitars for the money. And I mean, the Exotic ones are as well, but it is that top. And as much as I kind of like the top, I probably would get a bit bored of it. And I think if I was going for a nice feeling guitar, I've had faded guitars before, and they always just kind of get better with age, where the ones that are maybe finished in a poly that are kind of a bit plasticky, which some of those cheaper PRSs can feel like, they don't tend to age. And that's kind of one thing that sort of annoys me down the line, I think.
That would be the difference for me, actually. Like, I really like the Vela as a shape. I think it's cool. I think it's probably the coolest thing that PRS have done, certainly recently, maybe ever. But the thing for me would be the nitro finish. As you've talked about, Matt, like, it's that the aging. You know, there's, yeah, what you're going to find is with the plastic finished guitar, or I say plastic, with the polyurethane finished guitars, they just don't age at all. And yeah, you notice the difference in between, you know, in terms of guitars that are in this room, between my P-Bass and my Les Paul Junior, is that the Les Paul Junior has aged so much nicer. I mean, it's still a gloss finish, but it's nitro, and it's like sunk into the wood a little bit, and it just feels...
It's one of those. It goes back to what we were talking about earlier with regards to how you can feel generally, I think any three of us could probably, if you're presented with a real Les Paul and a Chinese Les Paul copy,
yeah,
we could probably pick it up and go, this is fake.
Well, yeah, I mean, the finish would play a huge part in
completely.
That. Like, I think it's, you know, we talk about, like, you know, tone woods and pickups and stuff like that. For me, a lot of the difference, the finish, it
completely
is a huge factor for me.
And I think the thing that really opened up that discussion for me was when maybe 3 years ago, it was while I was still at GAC, when Fender released those, I think they were FSR models. There was a Jaguar, a Jazzmaster, a Tele, and a Strat.
Oh, yeah,
that were Mexican guitars that had a nitro finish, and they were absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. They were better than any, like, those guitars were better, or were a better purchase.
Don't say it.
Pound for pound.
Don't say it.
Were a better purchase than a Baja Tele. They were. They were like pound for pound, they were better. Maybe they didn't look quite as nice, but they felt absolutely phenomenal. So I would say if it's going to be a guitar that you're going to have for a long time and you can afford the extra £250, spending that extra money will repay, you know, you won't need to buy another guitar for a long time because you will be so happy with it.
Yeah, I totally think that's the difference. As soon as you jump from a poly guitar to a nitro one, they do just have a bit more of a guitar for life feel. And also I think it will be a US made guitar. I think if you're going for the PRS, like, there is something to be said. Personally, they're not guitars particularly that I get on with in terms of how they play, but you can feel the quality of the US made.
I think that's not to play down the quality of those SEs, because I think they've really stepped it up, especially even in the last like 5 years. I think they've really stepped it up.
Yeah.
But for me, I don't actually think that, like, the craftsmanship of those comes into it too much. I just think that a nitro guitar is just a better purchase.
Yeah, I think so too. What should we do next? Let's do... there's a lot of good questions, actually. Okay, this one actually is pretty easy, but it's actually quite interesting. Sean says, the neck on my Gibson SG is creaking slightly when I bend certain notes. Is it a truss rod adjustment that's in order? Matt and I, what do you think?
Creaking slightly?
Well, let me just start you off, actually. So we talked about this on the Facebook group a little bit. This question's already kind of been answered, but I wanted to get your take on it. What people seem to think it is the nut. The string sticking in the nut.
Yeah.
So when you're bending notes, the string sticking in the nut, and then it's pinging a little bit.
Yeah.
From what Sean was describing, that to me sounds like the issue. I don't think it would be the truss rod in any way. What's the solution then if the strings are sticking in the nut?
It's partly...
Sorry, Jacob.
I was just going to say, partly it depends on what material nut you're using.
Yeah.
But in general, the answer to this is everybody's favourite product, Big Ben's Nut Sauce.
Get your nut sauce out.
Which is a fantastic product. About 5 years ago, they also, I think it was about 5 years ago, they also released, just in time for Christmas, the bumper bonus pack where you got a couple of extra things in there, which they called Big Ben's Nut Sack.
Yeah,
because it had all of the bits and pieces that you would need to maintain your nut.
Your nuts?
No. There's only one on the guitar.
Right. Yeah, yeah. What if you got multiple guitars?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Then you need. But I think nut maintenance is something that. I thought I had it. I'm sorry. I think nut maintenance is something that maybe is overlooked.
Maybe in your household.
You should never, occasionally ever not maintain.
Listen, we're not that type of podcast.
We are. We're 100% that type of podcast.
Stop it. We are a serious. He's not here. Dear listener, I'm pointing at the empty chair at the end of the table here.
But just before we move on from that point about us not being that type of podcast, I was walking to work on Friday, I think, and I just burst out laughing in the street because I was thinking about the Patreon episode where someone farted and then we just covered, like, we never referenced it, but you can definitely hear it.
I don't remember.
To go back and find Patreon
find the exact moment.
And find
was it Joe?
I can't remember.
It was either Joe or you.
I think
then.
It was Joe.
Was it you?
Oh, well, I don't think it was me. I think it was Joe.
Okay, wouldn't have been me because I don't do that sort of thing.
Still, no one has found Joe in the Demon Headmaster, by the way. There is a prize of one of those pedals over there for
fantastic
Demon Headmaster finding him.
Anyway, going back to the topic on hand of nut maintenance, you just need to make sure that you're What Big Ben's nut sauce does is it just adds a bit of lubrication to the nut to ensure that it's not sticking. And that is that's one of the like classic setup like tricks.
Yeah.
Just stick like every now and again, you don't need to do it very often, just stick a little bit of Big Ben's nut sauce in whilst you're restringing, and it will make such a difference. And that is, you're probably right, that's probably what's causing the creaking and squeaking. Also, I tend to find that was always a good solution for if strings were breaking.
Yeah.
If you're finding that strings are breaking a lot, quite often you will see that it's like either on the nut or the bridge. And it will just be that there's something, like maybe something a bit sharp there, or there's some interference of some sort, and the nut sauce just acts as like slight lubrication to stop that from happening, because strings do slip, and you know, when you're, if you're you know, bending strings a lot, they do move slightly side to side, and just allowing a little bit of lubrication in the nut will
so dumb.
Do wonders.
So dumb.
It's difficult because it's a dumb... They've done it on purpose.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
We should. Robin says, right, compressor question. I want to put a compressor after my fuzz so that when I roll my guitar volume back to play cleaner, the overall volume stays up. But I don't want it to compress the buzz of the fuzz pedal when I'm not playing. So I either need a perfectly silent fuzz pedal or a compressor with a threshold function. Any ideas? Will the new Boss CP1X do that? Matt Knight.
It's a tricky one, really, because what you're doing is you're taking away the nature of kind of a cool, like, germanium fuzz pedal that you can adjust with the volume, and then, like, not wanting that at the same time. I suppose what you want is a dynamic fuzz, but if you put a compressor after, you're still gonna lift the volume up, so it's still gonna pick some of the noise floor up, whereas if you put it before, it's not gonna work. I suppose the CP1X will, you can kind of set everything relatively flat, but because it's constantly analyzing what's going into it and applying different amounts of compression, I think you'll probably find it won't work. So I don't know if I could really answer that. I don't know if there is anything.
How about guitar, fuzz pedal, noise gate, compressor?
But the problem is when you roll the volume back and you're lowering the fuzz, the output that's probably coming out of the fuzz probably won't be enough to kick the noise gate open.
Yeah, that's true.
What about putting the fuzz in the loop of a noise gate with a really sensitive threshold?
Yeah, but
he still
wants the noise gate. He just doesn't want the like hum of the fuzz pedal.
Yeah, but you can...
But then again, when you roll back, like, I've got the Pelotor on my board. That's my main fuzz, and I kind of have it wound more on the fuzz face side of things. But I find if I roll the volume back on my guitar, I don't tend to lose a lot of volume.
It just cleans up
because you're just kind of reducing sort of the input signal, but I've usually got the output boosted on it anyway. So when it's up full, you're getting a little bit of a boost, but then you can roll it back for kind of the cleaner, more rhythmic stuff. So maybe you kind of just need, it depends what you're using it for, but maybe you just need to have a play around with how you're using it. But I can't think of anything because, yeah, there's no such thing as a silent fuzz pedal. I suppose in one way you could potentially maybe use a vintage style compressor in front that kind of squashes everything and gives you a little bit more clean sustain, and it will constantly always boost things up. You're still going to turn the volume down before you go into the fuzz pedal. Yeah. So
it's all about signal to noise going into the fuzz, isn't it? If you're putting less signal in there, then you're going to get more noise out of it kind of by default, basically. Whereas if you put more signal in, then in comparison to the noise, it's going to be higher. Yeah, it's going to be higher. So, yeah, really difficult. Fuzzes, you kind of have to deal with the fact that they are quite erratic and they are quite noisy. And that's kind of...
It depends what fuzz he's using.
Well, but they all sort of are, aren't they? You know, if you give it less volume, you're still going to get like buzz from the fuzz, as it were. Yeah. So Yeah, the fuzz pedals are an odd, odd thing because they're not clean and clinical. They are a bit of a sort of wild beast. What would you say is the kind of cleanest fuzz, Matt?
I mean, in terms of like overall noise, I mean, one thing you could check out, I mean, I love the fuzz face side or the vintage fuzz side on the Pelator. And I know Leon's just bought out a new pedal, which we didn't mention this week, called the Half Horse, which is just one half of the Pelator.
Oh, yeah.
And that was definitely one of my picks of pedals last year. So I'd say maybe check that out because I don't find that pedal particularly noisy at all. So maybe check that out. That's a great fuzz pedal that works really well. The mini fuzz faces from Dunlop, I'd say going for a more modern fuzz pedal, you'll get a better signal to noise ratio because of the components that they're using.
Yep. The White Atom as well,
Magnetic Effects, yeah. White Atom, yeah, definitely.
I think that's
yeah.
sort of like I really like that because it's a almost a drive, like you can get like a like drive sounds out of it.
Yep.
Which yeah. I guess is sort of moving away from what Robin is after, because by the sounds of things, it like
he wants fuzz.
He wants fuzz and he wants that vibe, but not all the time, but also all the time.
Yeah.
Which maybe the White Atom isn't the way to go because it can be cleaned up.
I think the Pelator, or like you say, Matt, the new Half Horse would be a good shout. Definitely, they sound like neat pedals. Definitely,
yeah. Pelican Noise Works.
It is indeed. With that, we're up at time. We should wrap this thing up. If you've enjoyed what you heard, you can hear more of it over at patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support Guitar Nerds. At $1 a month, you get no adverts and you get the episode a little bit early. At the $5 tier, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, as well as the occasional interviews that we do and the occasional mini series that we do, like Branton's Rant On, and coming up, I think we're going to record it in a few weeks, the Gear of Yesteryear, where we go through old Gear of the Year in old guitar magazines. And what else do you get for that tier? Just a load of stuff, basically. Oh, yeah, and you get the episode ad free and early, as you do on the bottom tier. And for $10, which is our executive producer tier, you get your name read out on every podcast thusly. Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, his name is Blair Toms, Carlos Mancha, Andrew McRow, Mark Cross is his name, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moon Gravit, Colin Anderson. There we go. That was probably the most and least tuneful name readings that we've done in any episode.
You forgot that Joe wasn't here to read out the names, weren't you? So you joined in with me.
No, I wanted to get up to speed. I was just...
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it worked out okay. Maybe next time I won't sing them. Not so good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you needed to.
No, I should have just said them. Anyway, thanks for joining us this week. You can also follow us everywhere on the internet at Guitar Nerds on Twitter, at Guitar Nerds on Instagram, Guitar Nerds videos on YouTube, and join the Facebook group because it means you can join in the podcast, sending in questions and chat to fellow listeners. facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. We're going to go and record the Patreon now. What are we doing this week? We're doing, What's Up with Squire Part 2, where we run down the rest of the Squire range, talk about what's cool, what's new from Squire Guitars. So yeah, patreon.com/guitar nerds for that.
Fantastic.
We will see you next week.
Thanks, gang.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.